Now I would like to introduce you to John Pritchard, the publisher of the Journal of Healthcare Contracting and CEO of Share Moving Media, who will be moderating this call. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Anna. I appreciate you setting this up today, and I would like to welcome our guest, Tim Chapman. Tim, I've known you for a while now. I think of your 22 years at McKinsey as the leader of their healthcare practice and certainly the president of STERIS. We have the slide up with your bio and your background on it, but a lot of people will be listening to just the recording of this as they're driving around or maybe on their headphones while they're at work. I'd love to hear a little bit of your background and your experience, if you would.
Oh, sure, John. Happy to do it. Spent 22 years at McKinsey, and I was the leader of McKinsey's operations practice, and I did not lead the healthcare practice. I worked almost exclusively in the healthcare practice. So I worked at the intersection of operations and hospitals and spent a lot of time helping hospitals make a lot more money, and purchasing and supply chain management was one of the areas where I dedicated a great portion of my time. I retired from McKinsey in 2006 and became the head of STERIS' healthcare division. So I was the president of their healthcare group. There are three segments at STERIS, one of which is the healthcare group. So I spent a lot of time working with the supply chain executives on the phone and beyond, you know, working with them to sell capital, consumable, and services products. Retired from STERIS in 2012 or so, and essentially now am an advisor to health systems and device companies and private equity firms and so on. And, really excited about the opportunity to share what I've experienced through 30, 35 years of experience of working with supply chain executives.
Fantastic. It sounds like you're well suited to help us with our topic today around how supply chain officers earn a seat at the table when the C-suite brings in outside consulting firms. It sounds like you certainly have had that purview for years on the multiple engagements you have. You know, why are C-suite executives reaching out to third parties for assistance on supply chain in particular?
Hey, John, it's a great question. And it reminds me, after I had left and retired from STERIS, I was working with a medical center, and I had the good fortunes of having purchasing work very closely in that medical center, and we in fact did something, you know, unrealistic and surreal. We actually retained a consulting firm to help us. So the reality is I've walked both sides of the aisle, both as a consultant and as a client. And it's interesting, back in the 80s and 90s, early 2000s, the concept of best practices being applied from outside the healthcare industry inside the healthcare industry was pretty novel, and so spent a lot of time with hospital systems doing that. But here we are in 2018, almost 2019, and the same questions are being asked, and C-suite executives are reaching out to third-party firms, whether it's my old firm, McKinsey, or Navigant, Deloitte, Accenture. I mean, there are a lot of really, really good firms out there. And I often get the question, you know, why? Why are you doing this? And, you know, everybody on the phone realizes the operating pressure of doing more with less. You know, it was interesting for a couple of years, you know, there was really good admissions growth. So revenues were outpacing expenses. But the last 18 to 24 months, the operating pressure of health systems has become quite pronounced. And Moody's presented a study in the middle of this year. They evaluated the top 340 health systems in the United States. And for the first time in a long time, total operating expenses outpaced revenue growth. So top line growth was 6%. Operating expenses were growing a little north of 7%. So margins are being squeezed, which is, you know, nothing new for supply chain executives and for health systems. But for the first time in probably 24 months, we're upside down in terms of operating leverage. Navigant presented a really interesting survey recently of the 100 CFOs in health systems, and 75% of those CFOs said the number one priority for their health systems for the next 12 to 24 months is productivity, labor and non-labor productivity. So the first reason, you know, C-suite executives are reaching out is the age old, do more with less. To be honest, the numbers are being presented to them and they're kind of scratching their head saying, wow, what are we gonna do about this? The other reason, there's two or three other reasons that I'll share with the group. of in particular importance is the total non-labor cost trends are actually growing faster than the labor costs. And this is a first for the industry where total non-labor costs are growing more rapidly than labor costs, both of which are growing more rapidly than revenues. And the reason for that is, you know, the age-old new technology, introduced new med devices, new pharmaceuticals, and so on. So none of that's terribly new. But what is new is, or at least a trend that is emerging, is that health systems are beginning to outsource shared service functions that historically they had never considered outsourcing before. So yeah, nutrition services, linen and laundry, housekeeping, those sorts of things have always been on the outsourcing list. But you're beginning to see health systems look at energy and energy management and total facilities management. And even the device guys, like where I came from at Steris, you got Medtronic running cath labs now for health systems, and Steris running sterile processing departments. So what you're seeing in this trend to outsourcing is a substitution of non-labor costs for labor costs. So what used to be on the payroll of health systems is now on the payroll of suppliers, which is fueling this total non-labor cost trend. That's not to say it's a negative. It's to say that at the C-suite level, when they look at the numbers on an aggregate basis, they're like, oh my gosh, these non-labor costs are quote unquote out of control. There's another phenomenon going on in health systems around the major markets, cities, anywhere there's an NFL team, there's an arms race going on in terms of facility additions, particularly outside of the acute care setting. So whether it's freestanding EDs, freestanding clinics, urgent care facilities, everyone now has a home health business that has facilities out there to replenish the needs for folks in the home. So every time we introduce new facilities in a health system, those are units of demand for total non-labor costs. And that trend is really just beginning. The whole continuum of care and, you know, volume to value, at-risk contracts, the networks of these health systems are becoming inordinately more complex, and it's really one of the drivers of total non-labor costs and why they're growing faster than the labor costs. And associated with that, you know, there are, you know, quite a few health systems who have a hard time, understandably, getting their arms around total non-labor costs. Certainly, supply chain executives are quite comfortable with MedSurg and a lot of the areas that traditionally fall within their purview. But when you start getting into some of these more esoteric purchase services and professional services, a lot of these outsourcing trends, the introduction of new business units and so on, it's actually a pretty complicated equation to actually calculate total non-labor costs and trend it out, which is, again, falls under the category of, you know, the second reason C-suite executives are reaching out is, you know, they're confused. They don't understand some of these indigenous trends that are driving growth. So, yes, there's operating pressure, but it appears to be even more pronounced when you take a look at the non-labor cost trends. The third factor about what leads a C-suite executive to reach out to a third-party consulting firm is, you know, unfortunately, supply chain executives don't often get a ticket to the dance to many of these key areas of non-labor cost growth. Usually you see supply chain executives having responsibility for MedSurg. Many of them are deeply involved in the P&T committees and the pharmaceutical space. Some are not. But then you start getting into purchase services and professional services and, you know, these new business units that are popping up on the ambulatory surgery side, the home health side. And sometimes those operating units don't naturally reach out to supply chain for assistance. So there's a large portion, and I dare say a very large portion, of non-labor costs flowing through a P&L of a health system that don't get the benefit of a really rigorous professional sourcing value analysis approach that supply chain executives can offer. So you kind of get what you ask for here. If you're not going to put the professionals of supply chain looking at these costs in a thoroughly thoughtful and professional way, sometimes these costs could be growing faster than we otherwise might. So the third factor that goes on here is C-suite executives often feel and sense tension, a tug of war, where the supply chain folks say, you know, we really want to help the IT executives deal with these EHR contracts or deal with our data security contracts. And the IT executives say, hey, I've got my own purchasing people, leave me alone. So that tension leads to a bit of noise, which can often lead C-suite executives to say, maybe we don't have the right approach. So the third reason that C-suite executives are calling the Hurons and McKinseys and the Deloittes of the world are that, you know, they're not confident that they've got the right eyes and ears and process in place to manage some of the categories that are causing some of the growth. And John, the final reason is, you know, having been a consultant, I can make the statement with, you know, quite a bit of fact, but these folks are really good at marketing and they stay in touch with these C-suite executives and they listen intently. And when a chief executive would express concern to me when I was at McKinsey about, you know, I'm really worried about my earnings outlook and we're struggling with some of these cost issues. Well, these firms are really good at putting together, you know, proposals and pitches and marketing collateral. I say, you know, we can help you with total non-supply chain cost management, clinical cost management. So 4 or 5 years ago, it was population health, you know, data analytics, the age of digital. I'm sensing that we're entering into a 2-3 year period of the age-old transformation, productivity, kind of go back to the future of things that we did in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. So I say this, it should not be a surprise to any of our guests, supply chain executives on the phone, that the phone may ring, and it may ring because, you know, the C-suite executives, everyone in health systems are kind of panicked. I mean, every day you wake up and Banner announced a 33% year-over-year reduction in operating income. Vanderbilt said, you know, we lost operating income by 70%, and they blamed Epic, which is a great whipping boy. But the reality is it's getting harder and harder for health systems to catch up with a compression of what's happening on the contractual side and revenues. And, you know, the non-labor cost trends, the ability to see those non-labor cost trends, you can't box a shadow. And executives reach out to the McKinseys of the world and say, can you help us? And, you know, these firms are really good and very professional, and they sure can. So I see this as a trend that's going to increase, John, in the next 12 to 24 months. And, you know, the supply chain executives joining us today and those who haven't had a chance to join us today really need to be prepared for that phone call.
Great. You've covered a lot of ground there. And we certainly wouldn't pick at an issue like this without asking you what your advice is for supply chain leaders. But before I move on and ask you that question, I'd like to just touch on a few things that you covered in that initial response, and more,
sure.
More particularly around outsourcing. It's real interesting to me to see that becoming more common, but like a lot of trends, they kind of ebb and flow. Are we just kind of in the upswinging of outsourcing, or do you think there's really truly a realization that the specialization of outsourcing brings truly value today by supply chain leaders?
That's a great question, John. That's a subject of a could be an entirely separate webinar. Three thoughts on that. My view on outsourcing is it's actually a skill. It's a skill that an enterprise and a supply chain executive uses to evaluate the cost and quality and effectiveness of a department or function or process within, in this case, the healthcare enterprise. It could be any enterprise, a bank, an electronics company, retailer, et cetera. So I always advise my clients to use outsourcing as a skill to evaluate opportunities to improve internal operations on cost, quality, and time, and quite frankly, use the process to, in a thoughtful way, steal shamelessly from what suppliers say they can do for you. My experience is the vast majority of what suppliers can do for a health system can do themselves. So it really is, the first point I would say is it's absolutely a skill that can be honed and used as a vehicle for continuous improvement within an enterprise, hospital or otherwise. The second point is hospitals have been outsourcing for years, and they outsource largely departments that are kind of labor intensive, that are, I'll use the word, lower on the skill meter, that have lots of turnover, and where it benefits from professional contracted management so that those areas can be more effectively managed than would otherwise be managed within the four walls of a hospital. So you've got firms out there, you know, like Aramark and those folks who, you know, are doing housekeeping and nutritional services and stuff in hundreds of hospitals. So they have honed a capability to be able to come into a hospital and say, let us help you manage and run these areas for you better than you can from a cost and a quality perspective. And we saw this in the 80s and 90s, so this is not new. But John, what is new is that because the whole volume to value world, and you know, whether in the BPCI world or any sort of at-risk contracts, Medicare or otherwise, you know, you're really having to double down as a health system on clinical care and quality. And you got to put all your ergs of energy there. And so what you're really beginning to see is health systems say, you know, there's some of these other areas that maybe we should be more thoughtful in responding to overtures from suppliers, whether it's energy management, total facilities management, or a trend that's coming, and I think it's going to accelerate, which is taking over some of these clinical shared services factories or departments and managing them for the health system. So as an example of that, you know, you do have the Medtronics of the world really proposing, let us help you run your cath labs better than you can, and them willing to, you know, invest in those cath labs, bring it current in terms of technology and support, and essentially running it as a, you know, a shared service factor that's co-owned in some respects by Medtronic and their health system customer. And John, the reason for this is pretty straightforward. You know, these med device companies are public corporations, and health system supply chain executives on this phone are doing a really good job of compressing their margins. So in order for them to keep their PEs and their multiples up, these folks are having to find alternative sources of revenue. And one thing they're finding as fertile ground is, let us help you run some of these shared services factories, clinical or non-clinical, in which our products and you use the majority of our products and services. So Steris has been asked many times, can you run my sterile processing department? You know, and people are saying, can you run my EP lab? Can you run my infusion centers? Can you run? And so I do believe that this is a trend that has been around for a while, but what is new is the willingness of health systems to investigate and explore with some of these device and services companies areas that you never would have thought would ever conceivably be outsourced, because these device companies and service healthcare services companies are viewing it as a source of revenue growth for them and their willingness to put some capital on the table. And it's just a really exciting a business opportunity for all concerned, if it can be managed effectively between the supplier, the service provider, and the health system. So I see it's a very exciting opportunity. I see it increasing, but it's really, it's not an RFP in a cloud of dust. This is a very different deal where you're literally bringing a guest in to run a clinical shared service operation. And one of the reasons I was a bit hawkish about this at Steris is because if the sterile processing department isn't functioning like a Swiss watch, that means the operating rooms aren't functioning like a Swiss watch. That means the surgeons get upset. And if it's an open network, some of these surgeons would elect to bring their cases to a competing hospital. So we didn't want to be part of the problem, but we have a lot of customers. When I was at Steris, asking us would be willing to help them run their sterile processing departments. It's easy to say, let's do it. It's a little bit trickier to actually get it done and really demonstrate significant value and improvement beyond just cost. So that's how I would respond to that question, John.
Great. Thank you for your insight there. You know, it's interesting. You touched on a topic that's really near and dear to my heart. I've done a lot of work on, and it's sourcing of services, purchased services, oftentimes we call them, but you mentioned professional services. And, you know, sometimes to me, it's surprising and almost scary that these hospital systems allow for professional sourcing discipline to be put on top of, you know, life-saving apparatuses, device, equipment, but not things like accounting, audit services, or even staffing, things that very well could be sourced so much better, you know, through a sourcing discipline, but they've become sacred cows, and it's to the tug of war you mentioned. Do you think as a nation we're getting better at that? Are IDNs getting better at that? Or is this still a huge opportunity for the marketplace?
You know, that's a good question. I can't speak for all health systems, but this issue of professional services, which is a subcategory under purchase services, is an issue in every industry. I have to tell you, whether it's IT and specialized Java programmers that we're contracting with, whether it's call center performance in a bank, and the issues we talked about within healthcare. What I can say is this: when I was advising another health system, we took their total non-labor costs and broke it down. And for most health systems, depending on size, whether it's an academic center versus a community center, that type of thing, but you're gonna see $5,000 up to $7,000 per adjusted admission is the total non-labor cost per adjusted admission. What's really interesting, John, when you trend that out, what you see over a 3-5 year period is the areas that are historically within the purview of supply chain, med-surg items, physician preference, non-physician preference, the vast majority of the areas where value analysis is focused. You see cost trends that are half labor cost trends and much less than revenue. So you can see we're really bending the curve from a standpoint of professional supply chain management. Pharmaceuticals, when you isolate for unpredictable factors like factors in terms of blood clotting and so on, or the introduction of, you know, really breakthrough drugs. You know, you just sit there and watch ESPN at night and you get sick and tired of hearing about biologics and, you know, these new drugs that are being advertised. They're wickedly expensive, right? But they're saving lives, right? So when you isolate for that, what really stands out is the fastest growing area is purchase services. And within purchase services, professional services are growing the fastest, to the point now where in many health systems, purchase services is greater than med-surg items. And so let me repeat that. When you break it apart, the fastest growing areas are purchase services, and it now is greater per adjusted admission than is med-surg items. And so you ask yourself the question, It wouldn't it benefit the chief financial officer, the human resources officer, the IT executives, the legal department, you know, all the different administrative functions? Wouldn't it benefit for them to give supply chain a ticket to the dance and to work thoughtfully to deal with some of these cost trends? And the answer to that question is, you know, obviously yes, but it's a very unnatural act for the CFO to invite supply chain in and say, hey, let's go after these expenses, because they have very deep, long-standing relationships with their audit firms. Human resources in terms of contingency workforce and labor management and benefits administration and TPAs and so. So it's really not an easy thing to do, but it's a very fertile ground, John. And quite frankly, it's one of the first areas the consultants focus on, because they know that there hasn't been the application of consistent application of thorough cost management techniques in a lot of these purchase services areas. So that's a great question. And it's one of the areas that I know absolutely should be included within the purview of supply chain executives. But what you really feel in these equations is most of these department owners fear the slippery slope. They fear that supply chain's trying to take the decision rights away as to who we use and how we use them. When in fact, you know, supply chain executives are, look, we're just going to do the fact-based analysis and we'll help inform you, Mr. CFO, head of HR, head of IT, of the cost of your decisions. We'll do an RFI, RFP process. We'll lay out the cost of your decisions and you can choose door A or door B or door C, but you'll know what, you know, if you go to the low cost or the middle cost or the high cost, you'll actually be able to value the cost of your decisions. So I could talk all day about this, but this is one of the areas that I feel deeply. A lot of these areas have nothing to do with taking care of patients, yet it's the fastest growing cost area in health systems today.
Yeah, it's going to be absolutely fascinating to watch too. It's always top of mind when I get some time with a supply chain leader, how they are doing it. You could ask the 340 in Moody's survey, and they're prioritizing in 340 different ways. You know, you also mentioned facility addition. You know, we've seen so many of these great world-class systems trying to move closer to the patient to a setting that's a lower cost entry into their health system. And, to your exact point, expand their, you know, their total non-labor costs, but to what extent they're often curious about. But I'd ask you, from a supply chain and an operational perspective, what other challenges do you see that trend putting on the supply chain leaders?
Many, actually, because the pace by which networks are growing and becoming increasingly complex, often is the case, the health system's IT capabilities, particularly their ERP systems, not their health records, but their ERP systems, they have a hard time keeping pace. So if you're running a health system and you're introducing new urgent care clinics, new freestanding emergency departments, new freestanding ambulatory surgery centers, et cetera, you know, you've got to get all those guys on the same GL. You got to get them all on the same chart of accounts. You've got to do all sorts of things to keep be able to keep track of all of these things. And even when you do that, the chart of accounts is absolutely atrocious at helping supply chain executives understand what's being spent and where. So, I don't mean to be, you know, harsh or critical, but there are many supply chain executives who are flying entirely blind when we talk about total non-labor costs outside of an acute care setting. And within an acute care setting, the ability to get real good information, John, on non-med-surge items, non-pharma items, anything that beyond that could be a bit of a magic carpet ride. It's hard for supply chain executives. It's almost a project in and of itself to get those data. And so supply chain data analytics is something that's been a hot topic for a long period of time. And it's yet another reason why, you know, often C-suite executives, quote unquote, bite the bullet and do a project just to, you know, chase down all of these costs. But what's really key is to be able to give the supply chain executives the information systems and tools that they need to do the jobs they were hired to do. I find supply chain executives and their staff basically are data gophers, kind of burrowing in, trying to find the information, you know, and that's not what they were paid to do. So the implication of this expanding network and the cost structure associated with it reminds me of a lesson learned we had in banking back in the 80s and 90s, where, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, it was a novelty to have ATMs, right? And then I had freestanding ATMs. Well, now I have ATMs and freestanding ATMs, and now I have home banking, and I have call centers, and I can transact stuff on the web, and I can do all sorts of stuff. Here's what happened. We opened up these multitude of channels. So now, you know, I have all these added costs, but I can't shut any of them because I have a portion of my customers, patients, who continue to rely on one channel over another. So we fundamentally increased the cost structure of banking and didn't do much to the profitability other than compress it. So in healthcare, we need to move to a lower cost setting. That's obvious. People have been saying that for years. But what are we doing with the mothership called the acute care enterprise? How are we variabilizing the embedded costs associated with that facility is a non-trivial question. So we're adding costs and under a compressed margin. It truly is one of the most complex conundrums facing health systems today. I have to compete in the arms race so I can be relevant with my next in class competitor in town, but I still have to have an acute care enterprise. I still have to have those beds. I still have to have those operating rooms. I still have to have those cath labs. I still have to have those endoscopy suites. And I just need to start shutting some of these units and shutting some of this capacity and variabilizing costs. So long story short, it is an unbelievably important discontinuity, not just for supply chain executives, but for the CFO to say, how am I really going to take these, you know, these fixed cost hogs and start putting them on a diet so that I can actually, you know, make money in a more disparate and complex continuum of care.
Yeah, well said. No, certainly no shortages of challenges there. So we certainly see some of the problems and issues that are causing rise to you know, the leadership team bringing in outside consultants and stuff. And I guess simply put, I kind of want to get to the second theme of the conversation is, what is your advice for supply chain leaders? How do they navigate this so they do have a seat at the table?
You know, John, I was, you know, reflecting on that in my kind of morning run, and It's funny. I was reflecting upon the programs that, you know, I was personally involved with when I was at McKinsey. And there were some programs that were just off the charts successful. There were other programs that were not nearly as off the charts successful. And I'll be, you know, open and honest, there were some that were a train wreck, right? And, you know, and I started saying to myself, what was the, and these are the supply chain programs that I led, but it's equally relevant for any sort of engagement. What was the difference between good and great in terms of these engagements? And some of the trends that we talked about really inform the advice that I'd share with the supply chain executives who are with us this afternoon. And there were three pieces of advice that I would offer up. First and foremost, when you get the phone call from the CFO or the COO or CEOs, hey, we hired McKinsey or Navigant or Huron or whoever to help us with supply chain, the first thing I would advise you to do is thank your leadership for investing the capital and the time and energy in your supply chain team and you personally. Thank them for being, you know, honest and willing to say what we're doing today can be better. And in that context of thanking them, absolutely be thoughtful in helping to shape the ambition, the objective of the effort, as well as the scope of the effort. And what I mean by that, John, is from a standpoint of ambition, you want to make sure that the effort is indeed delivering on the cost objectives that have been established for it. It is a cost reduction exercise, of that we have no doubt. But what's equally important is the root cause problems that are causing these non-labor cost trends are really pretty complicated, and you need a second objective that's equally important, if not more important than the cost objective, which is to muscle build the capabilities of the health system supply chain organization, not just the department called supply chain and purchasing, but the entire capability throughout the health system enterprise. So we have this kind of dual objective, and they're both, in my humble opinion, important. The latter, I think, is more important than the former, because I used to say to clients, you never want to have to do this twice, right? Well, if we only focus in on cost and do a 12, 24-month, 36-month cost-whacking exercise, we'll accomplish something. But those costs will just kind of fill right back in, and we may be asking a different firm to come in and repeat the engagements 2, 3, 4, 5 years later. So first and foremost, really ensure that the ambition for the effort is shaped on in those two areas. The second thing I would say in terms of shaping it, the process, is making sure that it's all in. You mentioned sacred cows, John. You really want all non-labor cost categories included in the effort. Purchase services, professional services, pharmaceuticals, non-acute assets throughout the continuum of care, even focused on accounts payable, days payable outstanding, and the payment strategy. It's amazing when I talk to health system CFOs that the supply chain team can add 5-10 days of cash by managing inventory and managing accounts payable more strategically. So really focusing on a comprehensive all-in approach to non-labor cost management. The third thing I would say is in shaping the approach is really challenge the firm. And the reason the firm was retained is hopefully predicated on the statement I'm going to make now. But start with the future in mind. Have that firm share with you what is best in terms of healthcare supply chain best practices. What does it look like? What does it feel like? What does it smell like? What's the from to that the health system needs to gap and close as a result of this effort? Back to the aspiration, this is not just cost reduction, it's cost reduction and muscle building the organization. And the last piece that falls in this area of kind of advice of shaping aspirations and scope is, you know, it's important that the supply chain executive be balanced in guiding and working with the consulting firm on both the cost reduction objectives and the muscle building objectives. You know, when you walk a mile in the consultant's shoes, many of these firms now are going at risk. You know, don't pay us until we've achieved our fees in terms of cost reduction. So, you know, if you're one of these partner around the table, these consulting firms, you're kind of, your sphincter's tightening because you gotta save a bunch of money before you start getting paid, right? And so some of these folks, you know, they would look at it and say, our number one objective is cost savings. Yeah, this muscle building stuff is great, but we'll get to it in the last couple of weeks. Interestingly enough, from a supply chain executive perspective, the second objective of muscle building your organization is more important than the first objective. And so you have a natural tension between the consulting firm and the supply chain executive. So the supply chain executive needs to be the adult in the room and be very balanced in making sure that we're focused equally on both objectives, and ensuring that the consulting firm, you know, really does dedicate the time to educating the C-suite executives as to what's happening, why it's happening. And, you know, quite frankly, say that a lot of this doesn't surprise them, because a lot of the gaps that are in place that are resulting in these accelerated non-labor cost trends really fall outside the responsibility area of the supply chain executive and the supply chain group. So first piece of advice, you thank the C-suite for investing in you and investing in your organization, but absolutely get your fingerprints on the aspirations, the ambition, the scope and approach of the effort to ensure that it is delivering on, in my humble opinion, the two objectives, which is make money, but make it stick. So that's a piece of advice number one. And John, before I hop on piece of advice number two, I just pause there. Any questions or comments on that first piece of advice?
Yeah, you know, it's real interesting. I really liked the piece about the natural tension kind of between consultant and supply chain leader and educating the C-suite, right? I think that's profound advice, because time and time again, when I talk to a supply chain leader, they kind of hint to the fact that the leadership team always looks at them and kind of insinuates, gosh, there's got to be more. There's got to be more you can do. When you think of that natural tension, what are a couple of the shortcomings in understanding you think the C-suite has about supply chain?
Well, I'll start with, my father was head of purchasing for General Electric under Reg Jones before Jack Welch came on, so it goes to show how old I am. And he used to tell me, he goes, look, son, he goes, there's two things really good purchasing leaders will tell you. They'll whip open their drawer and they'll whip out how much money they made for the company. And they can get down to the penny on that. Good supply chain executives have great pride in what they're able to accomplish in terms of cost savings. Then they'll whip open another drawer and they'll print out a list and say, here's how much more money I could save if I were given the invitation to do so. And what this boils down to is a lot of healthcare C-suite executives don't understand that non-labor cost management is actually a core process within health systems today, and any enterprise for that matter. And if you look clinically at the budgets that exist for all departments, again, healthcare or otherwise, you know, they don't naturally pop out at you to say, you're not budgeting for stents, you're not budgeting for, you know, distributed technology, you're not budgeting for a lot of these areas. There's a natural complexity between financial chart of account systems and data that can be used and useful to a supply chain executive in creating value for the, in this case, a healthcare enterprise. So what ends up happening is, you know, you're flying blind. I mean, CFOs fly blind. It really upsets me when they look at these major roll-ups that are just mathematic, right? And they say, what in the hell is happening with purchase services? And then they go over and quite frankly, supply chain doesn't have any invitation, or a few have invitations to deal with these things. And even then, when you pick up the phone and you call human resources or IT or finance or legal or whatever, you know, they're not really Johnny on the spot in providing answers. So to a large extent, John, the conundrum here is the visibility and the data and the analytics associated with total non-labor cost management. And as I mentioned earlier, purchase services and professional services now, you know, the largest component per adjusted discharge, adjusted admission, et cetera. And what's fascinating about that is the visibility on those areas is so weak. And a lot of folks aren't willing to take the time and pay for the spade work that needs to be done to set up the data architecture to kind of manage these costs like we would do in automotive. When I was in automotive, you know, in the 80s, I mean, I could tell you what every component cost in an automobile, and we had a target cost objective, and we knew the thousands of items that go into that car. If we were long on cost on some items, we had to come in short on others because we were not going to change the target cost. That sort of thinking has a long way to go to achieve you know, fertile grounds for fruition within health systems. But to say we're flying totally blind is probably not a fair statement. But the degree of visibility and granularity that supply chain executives have on a lot of the cost areas that are fueling the trends is not nearly as great as it is in the areas that in which they have a natural and have had a natural invitation to manage.
Yeah, that's great insight. I love your parable about the automotive industry, and it's very much what we're seeing with the health system budgeting process. When specialty pharma comes in at 13 to 18% higher than budgeted, and why that puts undue pressure on the glove manufacturers and the equipment manufacturers, because they've got to stay at that budgeted cost that they're working with. But I would ask you to just kind of please continue. What other thoughts do you have or advice for supply chain leaders with this challenge?
Yeah, I want to add one other. I have two other pieces of advice, but I want to build on something you just said, John, which is, you know, in the whole BPCI, the Bundled Payment Continuous Improvement Initiative, it was really a very clever, you know, CMS was very clever here. And they said, okay, for total joints, total knees, total hips, et cetera, you know, we'll pay you, you know, a capped amount throughout the entire episode of care. So you get your knee done and the orthopod does a massively great job. And then you move into the wild and woolly world of rehab, and it goes to the outpatient side. And you know, so what they're really saying is, I'm only going to pay you 19 grand all in, right? So here's a health system saying, holy moly, I think I know how much it costs within the four walls of my hospital. But the minute it leaves my four walls of my hospital, I'm in the wild, wild west, right? And so the whole concept of target costs through BPCI, you have this unbelievable industry called conveners, right? They're out there saying, let me help you manage this network for you. We'll do a great job on clinical practices, yada, 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 which, by the way, is wonderful. So network optimization is really what those conveners do. What the conveners miss is the ability to work with supply chain executives and say, you know, we got five different orthopedic vendors sitting in our shop. If we can move to a primary secondary, we could take out, you know, complexity, we can take out costs, we can do all sorts of wonderful things. If we can move away from a direct distribution model into the four walls of the hospital and work through our distributor and do more point of care type of logistics management, the internal cost savings is 50 cents of value. I can save a dollar through BPCI, 50 cents of it is network optimization, which the conveners work on, and 50 cents is supply chain and folks like supply chain being invited in to do their job. So I just wanted to share that with you, because this whole concept of target costs in automotive is really at the heart of what BPCI was intended to achieve. And I really think it's a great opportunity for supply chain. They should be really excited when health systems go at risk on some of their commercial contracts. Now, as I said, the C-suite executives can't spell purchasing and supply chain management. They spent so little time in it. But I think it's a great opportunity for supply chain's visibility and leadership quotient to grow. And I really do believe it's a great opportunity for folks on the phone and those who are not on the phone. Let me bridge, John, to the second piece of advice, because I know we're going to run on a runway here. The second piece of advice is, so I've really shaped the scope and ambition, but it's really important that the supply chain executive work with the consulting firm to have an appropriate metric or metrics for the success of the effort. And I know it sounds so obvious, but again, many of these consultants are going at risk, so they will focus really on the cost savings dimension. And in fact, you know, I've seen some consulting firms, including my firm, who would go through some pretty elaborate processes to advise the CFO to modify budgets real time to quote unquote bake the savings into the budgets. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just going to make the following statement, which is, it's kind of naive to think that, you know, we're doing this supply chain work with a third-party consulting firm. Everybody's engaged. Everybody's focused. But when you start thinking in those terms, you miss what's reality, which is, while we're doing the work, we're still taking care of patients. And a large portion of the categories that we're talking about are volume sensitive, are mix sensitive, are acuity sensitive. So I've seen a lot of health systems essentially say, look at the work we did on cath, look at the work we did on ortho, look at the work we did on purchase services, look at, And then what ends up happening is the CFO says, you know, we didn't save a damn thing. And when you really get underneath the covers, we did save money, but volumes were up 5% or 8%, or some factors over which we don't have control come into effect. And then you get into the age old soft dollar versus hard dollar debate, which really upsets me. And that's a indicator that the consulting firm and the supply chain executive need to ensure that there's a different way of gauging and measuring the success of this effort. So yeah, we want to bake it in, but baking it in is, you know, you're not going to get any Christmas cards or Halloween candy from the budget owners when the supply chain folks show up and say, I got to take $1 million out of your budget, right? So what I advise is an approach to measuring success of this effort that is first comprehensive. Everything's in, this whole concept of no sacred cows. Anything that's non-labor is in. And we need to normalize those costs. And we can normalize those through many different ways. And all you need to do is tell the CFO to whip out the labor cost management schedules. Every denominator, you know, from A through Z is benchmarked on labor costs. Then you go to the non-labor schedule and it's got printed intentionally left blank, right? There's nothing, right? And so what we need to do is normalize through adjusted patient days, adjusted discharges as a percentage of revenues, something that allows you to normalize for changes of volume, mix, and acuity. It needs to be granular. You need to be able to break it down, pharma, purchase services, med-surg, and within each of those areas, the subcategories. So you've got to be able to easily do it, and which can be done in most health systems today, but you also need to be able to flip it by budget owner. So the budget owners in charge of revenue cycle management need to know that their non-labor costs are, you know, $120 per adjusted admission. And they're going to look at it and say, what the hell are you talking about? And you go into their budget and you say, these are the major suppliers that you're working with, and it's $120 per adjusted admission. The reason, John, that's really helpful is that you could make an ambition. So let's take an example that I work with. It's $7,000 of total non-labor costs per adjusted admission. We set an objective to reduce that by $250 per adjusted admission, which equates to $35 million of cost takeout. So everybody looks at that and says, well, they look at the $35 million, but what the supply chain executive is focused on is the $250 per adjusted admission. And what that does, if everyone embraces the concept, is it increases the collective awareness of the enterprise as to what we're spending. Labor costs per any denominator is well known, but when people see the non-labor costs are now growing faster than the labor costs, and all in are getting pretty close to being greater than labor costs in some hospital systems, it begins to take on a different meaning, and there's more ownership of the total non-labor cost equation. So, you know, I would advise anyone to avoid the temptation to do the budget modification inside of a budget cycle. But again, some of these consulting firms are being paid at risk, and sometimes that leads them to that sort of protocol. But what I do believe is really important is having a metric that allows you to normalize for volume and mix. And it's great that you can say it's $250 per adjusted admission and $35 million. The consulting firm's going to see the $35 million. What you want to focus in on is the $250 per adjusted admission. In that basis, you can be, I think, have a metric that's going to stand the test of time. And secondly, it's going to create much more of a Hawthorne effect and a collective awareness. And everybody then becomes in tune with what they're doing and what they're buying and how it's influenced by volume. So second piece of advice, absolutely important to have a metric that's more than just a cost savings log and baking things into the budget, and comprehensive, normalized, and having the drill down capabilities both on a category basis and a budget owner basis is my second piece of advice. Any questions, John, on that?
No, very insightful.
Okay, great. Last piece of advice is one that may be the toughest for supply chain executives to internalize or embrace. But I always advise supply chain executives to quote unquote be the client. Now, so for most consulting firms, the answer to the question, who is the client, is the person who pays you, who sends you the, you send the bill to, right? But often those people are, you know, on the C-suite, and they don't have as much time to share with the consulting firm as the consulting firm would like. And it's a natural opportunity for the supply chain executive, back to my first point about shaping the ambition and the approach and the scope of the effort. It's really important that the supply chain executive move into the informal, quote unquote, client role, signaling to the consulting firm and signaling to everybody in the organization that you are all in on this effort. And I like to think about it as you've invited a guest into your house. You want to make sure that guest accomplishes what he or she is trying to accomplish while he or she is a guest in your house. And so in that context, there's absolutely important that you be supportive of the consultant, a statement of the obvious, but it's also important back to this balancing between cost savings and, you know, muscle building the organization. Urge the consulting firm to really help you learn. So ask the consulting firm to say, can you give me a name or two of other supply chain executives with whom you've done similar work? I'd really like to talk to them or visit with them and learn from them, ask them what they wish they had known, what they would do differently if they did it all over again, but really adopt this concept of a learning mindset. These consultants will be flattered to be able to make those introductions. Work with the consulting firm on how to really internalize and define how to move from the as-is state from the standpoint of the best practices that the consulting firm would say is, here's what best practices looks like, gap those out and have them come back with recommendations along a number of dimensions. One is the expectations of role of supply chain needs to be highly strategic and comprehensive and, you know, really the span of influence and the value-added touch needs to be much higher in health systems than it is today. The capabilities and capacity of the supply chain group, I know of no supply chain group that's overstaffed, right? There's almost always an infinite number of cost reduction efforts and opportunities like this outsourcing opportunity. We just don't have enough time in the day. So do I need more capacity, more people? Do I need different types of people? Usually health systems do. Look at the thoracic system of supply chain, the processes that really are in place at best practice organization, whether it's the sourcing process, the value analysis process, competitive intelligence, the payment strategy to drive DPO, contract management, data management, digital assets. Those are all processes that exist. How healthy is our enterprise? Do I need an interventional cardiologist to declog some of these? Do I need to reinvent them? And then challenge the organization on linkages and interdependencies of the supply chain group to department owners, the big spending departments, the invitation on the budgeting process, including capital, the ability to have clinically savvy supply chain executives and staff who can work with physicians. My brother is a surgeon, and I hear this all the time. Surgeons and physicians really are, you know, inordinately cheap people, so they want to save money, right? But you know, they tend not to be comforted by the data that are brought back because some of the data are incomplete. So we need to have these linkages and interdependencies. You know, supply chain shouldn't be the last to know about, you know, we're opening a new facility or we're merging with this or buying that. Supply chain ought to have a seat at the table on some of these important departments and processes that live outside of the supply chain group itself. And the last point piece that falls under this be the client is be very, very aware of what I call the reputation whisperer. You know, while the person paying the bills doesn't have all the time to meet with the consultant, they do meet with the consultant. And it shouldn't surprise you that the CFO or CEO says, so how are we doing? Are you running into any difficulties, any blockers? How's the supply chain executive doing? And what you really want to do is role model the behavior and shape what they're whispering into the ears of the C-suite executives. And this is not in a manipulative or passive aggressive. You are all in on the success of the effort. This is your house. But recognize that you are won't be able to control the consultants, who they talk to and what they say, because you're really not, quote unquote, the client. In many cases, you're not the client. but you are really the informal client. And through shaping and modeling this, what I'm suggesting here, what you're going to hear from the CEO or CFO is great feedback from the consultant about how much you're all in on this, how much they enjoy working with you. And you know, all of that by way of saying the best supply chain engagements I did in healthcare, the supply chain executives were promoted and they received extended and expanded responsibility areas because of much of what I'm describing here was the way that supply chain executive behaved throughout the process and thereafter. So that's the third piece of advice that I would share with those with us today, John.
Great. All sage advice. I really appreciate that. I was just looking at my notes to wrap today's webinar, and the response from the listenership has been really good. We've had over 95% of the people stay on the line, which is great. And having done so many webinars, you get a real good feel for the response by how many stay on the line. But I know they're going to want to end at 3 because we scheduled an hour for it, at least 3 o'clock Eastern time. But I was just going to wrap and thank our Vantage Point Logistics sponsor. And I noticed their tagline, "We are reinventing freight management." So I guess it begs the question that, you know, we could pick any service line, but let's pick freight management. How does freight management fit into the above advice you just gave our listeners?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because it is actually the poster child of what we're talking. It's a great illustration of what we just talked about for the last hour. First, I don't know any health system today who can actually quantify their total freight costs, both inbound from the supplier into distribution or direct into the facility, and then the what we'll call hospital-initiated or provider-initiated freight. A lot of the deliveries that you're making to these non-acute assets. So it's really hard to get your mind around the total costs of freight. So it's an illustration that you get what you, if you can't box a shadow, right? It's also an area that is typically falls outside of supply chain's responsibility area. A lot of these folks are ordering things in these non-acute assets, and sometimes the terms and conditions are outside the responsibility of supply chain. So it illustrates once again, you know, when supply chain is involved, good things will happen. Vantage Point is really a terrific partner to supply chain executives.
Tim, thank you for your time today. Very insightful. I appreciate you making time for us today. And listeners, thanks for listening in today. And I appreciate everybody attending.